Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
Thank you for joining us. This is Community-Driven Growth in SaaS. And now we'll put some panelist introductions.
Hi, everyone. My name's Casey Baldwin, and I'm really excited to be here moderating this conversation today. I have built my career at the kind of the intersection of marketing and community building, working with startups around the country to help them both pinpoint their most resonant voice and scale the communities of brand advocates that they rely on. And today I have the privilege of continuing the work that I do now as the director of marketing and platform at Bring Ruckus, where I get to, among other things, host really riveting conversations with thought leaders in business and technology and growth, like the experts that we have before you on the panel today. So with that, I will pass the mic to them and Laura.
Hey, everybody. I'm Laura Cascarelli. I'm an account executive at HireLogic. I never had a plan in terms of community. I was a teacher many years ago. I worked in digital curriculum development, and I was running a program for teachers, and I had no way to connect it with each other or our volunteers. And that's sort of the first time I completely by accident, 10 years ago, built an online community to serve the people in my program. So I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know what I was doing was community management. I picked a terrible tool, then a better tool. And then I found my community of other community people. And so it's just been such a wild ride. And it's been incredible to be a part of this community for so many years now. So I ran teacher communities for many years. And then I joined HireLogic as a consultant a few years ago, helping a teacher groups are still dear to my heart. But that's how I've also then moved into SaaS communities and building out communities for medical groups, and then so many other, everyone's just trying to build an engaged network of the people that they're serving, but don't always have the right tool to do it. So I love early stage, reviving, refreshing communities, all of the different stages of development. And now I'm in a different role where I help groups select the platform to build their long-term community home. So yeah, so I'm excited just to nerd out and talk community with all of you today.
I'm Jillian Betlick, Director of Community and Documentation at Zapier. I'm actually pretty new to Zapier. I'll be 6 months next week, but this is my 14th year working with communities. So been doing this for a long, long time. And like I think everyone that, you know, is probably listening and everyone that's a panelist on this, I didn't mean to end up in community. My background is actually in engineering. I was supposed to be an architectural and structural engineer, went to college for it, graduated. Got myself an awesome job in support working with, you know, really, really cool software, made a fuss, ended up with the keys to a giant community. And so, you know, that's kind of been my journey. I've always worked in really technical communities, love UI, UX, metrics, analysis, psychology, all of that super cool stuff. I usually refer to myself as a community nerd. So I'm definitely kind of excited today to nerd out on some of the questions that we got and super happy to be here.
Hi, everyone. Great to meet you all virtually. My name is Nisha Bakshi, and I'm the head of community at Gong. Before I give my introduction, just want to thank Laura Cascarelli, who invited me into this group and to be part of the discussion today. She is my new friend in community, and all of you community professionals know how wonderful other community folks are. We always are reaching out and trying to get to know each other and build strong bonds and help each other basically build the profession. I know Jillian just spoke and said that people, she just sort of hopped into the profession. And it's really wonderful to see that now there's like master's programs and programs in schools where people are actually learning about community. You know, my story is actually really similar. I was running a community meetup group for fun in 2009, and someone from Microsoft approached me in 2010 and said, "Hey, did you know that you could get paid to do this?" And I was just mind blown because I was working at a startup and I was getting paid peanuts. And I was like in my early 20s and I was like, I didn't know that this was a job. And so, yeah, I spent probably the past 15 years, you know, building my career in and around the developer audience, developer communities. And then when I landed at Salesforce, I had the opportunity to work with sales folks and realized, wow, this is really great. And then when I headed up marketing at a startup called Monte Carlo, I had the opportunity to use Gong. And I kind of had a moment to myself where I said, if there's a dream job that I could ever conjure, what would it be? And I quickly realized, well, if I could start a community team at Gong, that would be perfect. And thus me being here today. So just really happy to share my story and to learn from all of you as well.
Anisha, I did a meetsy through Gong community just this afternoon. And so I was talking about you. So I just want to thank you too. It's real. There's the real connections that you can make with technology matching people. And I got to have this incredible conversation with another woman AE across the country. So I think that's just the real power of community. And we're like critiquing each other's LinkedIn profiles and talking about social selling. And so I think that's the real sort of magic of all of this, is it leads to real connection and real support too.
That makes me so happy.
But
it's perfect. It's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. So the first question that we had submitted from our registrants today was, how did you end up in a community-driven role at your company, which everyone kind of touched on it, but I would love to get a little bit more of the background. What previous experience do you believe helps you most in your current role? But also, I guess I want to expand that a little beyond like technical experience or things that you may have done in a job, and ask if there are any traits that you think are valuable in the community roles that you're in as well. Because what I heard, especially from Laura and Nisha, was that the community, nurturing community, was something that came really naturally to you already. Whereas Jillian, it sounds like you kind of found a community and then were like, oh, okay, I got to learn how to navigate it, right? Or built a community and then learning how to manage it. So yeah, would love to hear all of that from anybody who has thoughts.
I can share. So for those like Myers-Briggs fans, I am an ESFPA. So if it's like nature and nurture, from a nature perspective, I'm an entertainer, I'm extroverted, observant, feeling, and prospecting. That's that. I think the other thing that makes you successful in community and just in life is just being nice. I know that that sounds really silly, but I think that so often, especially in community, people are, you're constantly bartering for favors and asking people for help and them helping you in return. And you working together and collaborating. And I think just so much of that is just being like authentic and genuine. And also just like asking people like what you can do to help them. And then sometimes they're like, yeah, you know, I really want to write this content piece for you, but I really just don't have the time. And I'm like, cool. Can I spend 15 minutes with you just interviewing you? And I will take the Gong transcript and I will make a post for you. And all you have to do is copy and paste it. And so like, that's the way that I like to work. But I'll let the other panelists answer.
Yeah, I think so. My first community job, my title at the time, I was a program manager at a nonprofit. And so I was running workshops. And so that, I think for a lot of groups, if you're the events person, that's such an important engagement touch point that a lot of groups do start with, even if it's virtual events like this one or in-person events or workshops, that's such a core moment. And you're probably going to be in that role if you're organized, if you're a relationships person, if you think about content and experience. All of those things tell me that you're really going to, at some point, you're probably going to be able to transition to community work. And then my next role that was officially a community manager position was at a small startup SaaS company. And I was actually, it was around recruitment. So how do you build a movement? How do you build a brand? And so I was in charge of building this pipeline of trying to recruit 4,000 teachers for this application. Then it led to our in-person sort of conference. And so how do you build relationships? I would get on the phone and just call and call and call and try to get people to complete their application, but also just listen and make them feel valued. And I can't tell you the number of times, I know we talk a lot about online communities, but just to pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm calling you from this company, that blows people's minds. And so I would even do that when I was at Osmosis. I would sort of ping out from intercom. I'd send a little message. Do you want to grab 10, 15 minutes? I just want to hear about your experience. There's almost sort of this neutral body approach of, I'm truly just here to listen. I'm not on support. I'm not on marketing. I'm not doing product research. I'm truly just here because I just want to listen and understand your experience. And so you have this sort of neutral Switzerland zone of, I just truly want to understand. That's a special person though too. So you really have to be the person who wants to seek out relationships, doesn't have an ulterior motive, true servant leadership, but also still being really organized and thinking about where this fits into the overall experience. And that's going to really sort of lend yourself to being, that tells me that you're a community person if you approach your work that way too.
Yeah, I think my experience, kind of like what I can add to this is, so I actually kind of came from a different perspective where my introduction to community was that I already loved the type of community it was. coming into my very first community job there, I'd already spent so many years being a super user, a volunteer moderator, all of these different roles on community. I didn't realize there was someone behind the scenes actually orchestrating all of that. And so I think probably the experience that really helped me the most throughout my career is that I've always tried to work with communities that me as an individual, as a person, I am actually legitimately passionate and excited about the thing that the community stands for. And that really helps me connect with my users in a very, very authentic way. So I think that's kind of cool. But yeah, and like that's actually driven my career. Like I'm very picky about who I work for, who's on my resume, because I want to be places that like I actually personally want to be part of that community.
That resonates so much. And I think that, I mean, I wonder how common it is for people to have that path in community of being a part of the community and themselves and then becoming a leader in it. Because obviously, if you're passionate about it yourself, making sure that it continues to be a space that everybody can benefit from and really thrive within would come naturally from you. So that totally resonates.
Yeah. And I always give that. That's one of the biggest pieces of advice that I give to you. If you're thinking about a community career, there's no barrier to entry. You can just jump right in. Just find the community that you care about, post there, respond to people. You're going to get scouted. You're going to be seen. That team or that company, especially if you're a customer of that company, they're going to view you as a champion because you are. They're going to see how you engage with people. They're going to see how you build relationships and how you write posts and your dedication to that group. And that really can be, I've seen so many groups hire from within, from one of their community members, because it's almost like an internship. Essentially, you sort of proven yourself before the job. And I always recommend that. It's also really hard to hire community managers. So if you're on the hiring end too, that's a really great way just to weed people out and see if there's someone. So start by scouting from your community, because that's a really, really great starting point.
It's a great tip. I love that.
Yeah. Just to kind of like add to that is I'm sure someone on this call right now is thinking, I really want to get into community management, but I don't know where to start. I don't know how to get into it. This is like a crazy suggestion, but go find yourself a giant Facebook group that is out of control on something you're passionate about and go volunteer. And Laura knows this about me, but
I know, tell this story. This is so great, Jillian.
Pure and utter fun, just because sometimes I miss the crazy moderation side of things. I help moderate and administrate the largest women's mountain biking group on Facebook. We have about 17,000 members in that group, and it's crazy. But it's something I do for fun. And ironically, it's something I actually mentioned during interviews. And people actually stop and they're like, that's a huge Facebook group. Like that's serious. And I imagine if I went back to the beginning of my career and if I'd watched my interviews and been like, yeah, I've been a moderator for 2 years for the largest Facebook group for, you know, female mountain bikers, companies probably would have noticed. So advice to all of you, go find a group that you're already passionate about, get involved, volunteer to help. Most groups are never going to say no to an additional moderator or someone with some strategy ideas. And it's a really, really great way to break into this field and also see if you like it and what parts you like.
Jillian, that's a brilliant idea. Just brilliant.
If we can go to the next question. Yeah, I think this is another potential barrier of entry that people have to deal with is just getting buy-in from the people on your team, whether that's the executives and needing to get approval for budget or bandwidth to go and take care of your community, or getting your colleagues and peers on board. So how have you gone about, or have you ever needed to communicate the ROI and defend your passion for community and what it can do for the business?
All right, this one, I'll tell my nightmare story and what I learned from it. So this is a SaaS company, very, very small early stage startup. And the founder, of course, wanted to demonstrate the ROI of the community. And so where I'm going with this is we did not have interconnected systems or the accurate data setup to access any of this. So we had the data guy, like he was pulling some reports. He would try to make these spreadsheets. We were trying to see how many advocates led to referrals. It was so hacked together. I think the amount of hours that we spent, me trying to work with him to make these insane spreadsheets, we should have just been doing the work. It was so inefficient. It honestly would have been better just to not even worry about it until we had all the systems set up. It was such an early stage startup. So I'm not saying it's not valuable, but we can all take it with a grain of salt and build a longer term plan. And for me, the earliest stages, I think of these as sort of four buckets. The most important one, I believe, no matter what, which is very hard to quantify and have a chart to go back to, It's the integration across the business. That's my number one goal if I'm starting a community, especially at the beginning. Is this impacting the core operations of the main departments that it needs to hit? Is it impacting customer success? Is it impacting product? Is marketing happy? Is there some sort of support component to it too? I think I got all four. Those are usually the top four. But I want the community to be delivering some sort of outcome or impact across those four departments. Because then those four departments, my other next test is, if the community went away, would the business notice? Would the business be able to operate and run? And if the answer is no, I've done my job right. Ideally, I'm impacting all four of those areas where if the community, we lost it on whatever platform we're on, they wouldn't be able to do their jobs effectively anymore. And so that's really what I'm looking for at the core. So there's not really a chart or like an export or a graph for that, but that's the sort of most basic ROI that I can think of is product can't live without it, support can't live without it, marketing can't live without it, and customer success can't live without it too. Then from there, let's say we want to get more advanced. Ideally, then you do have these integrated systems. You have Salesforce and NPS score. I saw the comment come up. You know, we're impacting retention. We have the charts and our graphs. Ideally, we are tracking a lot of this back to retention and satisfaction, probably. Maybe even in marketing, are we acquiring new business from the community? But the point is you don't need to have all these interconnected systems and the perfect reports and the perfect ROI reporting. Start with the most basic. Have we integrated across these four departments? Can they not live without it? Call it a day and start there.
Yeah. And similar to that, I mean, I think there's so many different frameworks where you can apply those frameworks and say, okay, well, this is how I'm going to communicate ROI. And so, you know, a framework that we all know and love are OKRs. That's a really great framework. And so look at the company framework or the group that you're in. So I'm in the success organization. I'm at Gong. And so, okay, well, who's in the success organization? Well, I've got success folks, we've got support and all of that. So like, I'm constantly thinking about, okay, well, how is the community, not necessarily causation, but correlation of actually, you know, continuing to make sure that our customers are renewing. It is, what does our attrition rate look like? I think that's really helpful. And then also when you're tying to those like broader goals, I mean, I think David Spinks's framework is really amazing. Like think about spaces. And I think, you know, Laura, as you were saying, like, well, these are the things that I care about. I mean, you listed departments that, you know, you listed support, you listed product, you listed success, marketing. So tie into that. So an example for support would be, you know, providing scale, like with deeper value. So like we think about case deflection, I remember percentage of case deflection. And when we were at Salesforce, we always said like 20 views equals one case deflection. Don't exactly know where that formula came from. You probably need to create one for your own company, depending on the stage or the community and how long the community has been around. But it's something to consider and to think about. Then acquisition is a really big deal, right? So not just acquisition in terms of how many people are coming to your community, but how are we supporting revenue goals and getting new customers? So how many new customers are actually in the community? So are you building the community as like part of onboarding? Can you show people that are in the community are, you know, 55% less likely to churn than people that are not? So everyone's going to want people to go into the community. Now, I think we always put so much pressure on ourselves. Well, we need to show direct causation. Well, if you show enough correlation data over a long period of time, there's going to be trends that people see. Same with, you know, contribution, success. Like, you know, one of our company goals is, well, how do we create raving fans? That's what we call our customers. Laura, we consider Laura a raving fan. And so how do we continue to delight our raving fans? And so when we're putting together those OKRs at an executive leadership level, then I'm like, okay, well, this is how I plan. Like I can commit for the community can commit X to continuing to achieve that goal. So just always like anytime someone's like, well, Bill, decide how this is going to impact the company. Just say, okay, well, what are the four things that we care about this quarter? What are the four things we care about this half? And then just map out programs that align to that. And it'll always be okay.
Yeah, I very much agree with everything everyone else already said. But to kind of really simplify it even more is that when I tend to look at ROI and taking it up to my stakeholders, my leaders, I tend to look at two things. The first one is, am I speaking their language? Because the reality is that, you know, I have definitely gone in front of leadership and been like, number of members and time to answers and all these things that I thought were super, super, super cool because I'm a community professional. But the reality is that that wasn't their language. And they just kind of stared at me and went, is that good? Is that bad? In fact, sometimes they thought that a metric that I thought was amazing, they read it the opposite because they don't work in my field. So that's number one. Always, always, always try to speak their language. That definitely really, really helped. The other thing is I like to look at ROI from two perspectives. The first one is your cost savings and your value add. A lot of times I see people tend to approach ROI from one or the other. They tend to forget that the community can do both. So for instance, with the Zapier community, we're in the midst right now of actually building out a very, very specific dollar value model. Like, you know, hopefully by end of the year, we'll know exactly how much money the Zapier community is saving Zapier in addition to adding to Zapier's, you know, profit. And it was a really interesting conversation to go to the CEO with that and be like, okay, what behaviors in your mind add value? What things save us money? And to really understand, you know, his perspective on that definitely, definitely helps. So I guess kind of the biggest thing I'd say is just keep it simple. That's probably my wisest thing I can possibly say when it comes to metrics is don't overcomplicate it. Don't go for the biggest, shiniest numbers. Go for things that you're very, very comfortable and confident about and you're able to defend without getting really frustrated.
Yeah, and that's something, Jillian, something you brought up made me think of. Something that I worked on when I was on the consulting side was our customers don't always know especially if you're new, how do you report to your executives and your board? How do you structure that conversation? What do you show? And something that we landed on that I helped design was you have the metrics, making it really easy to digest, having exactly what you said, Jillian, is this good or not? And so, right? Because I can look at a number and say, oh my gosh, we're off the charts. But if the executive doesn't know, they might. So then you start to have this really contentious conversation. So we even did simple color coding compared to our benchmarks. That was really, really helpful to structure the conversation. And in green, if we're above, yellow, and then red, make it super digestible. But then we also had a slide in pulling just maybe one or two, I call them the warm fuzzies. Pull those beautiful sort of warm, fuzzy stories from your community too, of a really great interaction of somebody helping each other, a really great post about how much they love your product too. And I think the reporting can often be limited to just the quantitative slide, but make sure you have that sort of quantitative warm, fuzzy story to tell too when you're doing that conversation or that impact reporting. Typically a quarterly basis is totally good. But just don't ignore that and show off that work too, because they might not actually be in the community every single day. They might miss it. And they want to see the sort of story, sort of warm heart and feel of it too.
That's a great point. I really love both, Jillian, your point about just making sure that you're speaking the language of your stakeholders. And Laura, the color coding was obviously very helpful. But I think I've definitely had situations where, you know, the CEO and the board have clung to that one story that you can share of someone who, you know, decided to remain a member or just that like had such a great experience that they, you know, brought in 12 of their friends as well. Like there, you know, so many of these just clear one-to-one examples that you can't look at the numbers, but you can see the human element of it. I do think that that is really important and resonant.
And that's what they're going to remember. You know, like there should be an accountability piece. Your numbers are fine. You're going to get the engagement that you want to see. I think people can get so stressed about the ROI. You're going to have the ROI. This usually doesn't go wrong. But when the executives leave, what do you really want them to leave with? Make sure they can leave with an actual story. And that's what's really going to resonate too.
For sure. And color-coded numbers. I love it. Grace, can we get the next question? So where do you recommend for anybody who's in a community management position, but without a community to manage? Where can they start?
I've been in this position a few too many times. So I will jump on this one. It's first off, okay, so when you look at your ecosystem, you're going to have your customers who are your future members, and you're going to have your organization. Now, a lot of times with communities, we make the mistake of going, we know what our audience wants. Don't worry about it. Put it down on the table. Let's focus on what the organization wants. And that's where you end up with these communities where they're like, we're going to have a finance community. We're going to talk about how much people love their credit card and how they spend their money. That's not what the customers wanted. So it's really, really important is if you're in a situation right now of starting a new community, take these two pieces and put them together. And this space in the middle is where you need to hang out. That is your shared value. Put yourself in the shoes of your customers. In fact, if you can, ask your customers, literally grab a bunch of them, sit them down and say, we're going to build a community. What do you want from us? What's that thing you wish the organization was having with you? Like that conversation we were having with you. Then also do that with the organization. Say, hey, what do you want? And if you can deliver that middle space, you're going to be in a really, really, really awesome location. Now, side note, if you're working with a product, more than likely you're going to find yourself in support to start. That is okay. It's an awesome launch pad to go everywhere else. So keep in mind, your community is going to have different phases.
Jillian, I swear you like were in my mind and you were going to say exactly what I wanted to say, is that there's always like three things. It's what the company wants, what the customers want, and then all the things, if you don't have a platform yet, but if you do, all the things that a platform can do. And so there is a temptation. Well, if you do have a platform, if you don't, that's a separate story. But if you do, you just want to turn everything on, which is a bad idea. And so when I went into Gong, I said, okay, thank you all for letting me know all the things that you want to do. But are we all on the same page when we say that our customers are first? Everyone's like, well, yeah, duh, of course our customers are number one. You're like, great. So I'm going to interview as many customers that will talk to me. So I talked to 30 different customers. So I actually mapped out who are the high impact personas that we want to go after. Like, who are the customers that we want to replicate? We want that person times 10. And so that was a conversation. So I would get on the phone with them. I had questions that I wanted to ask. Laura even may have received an email from like the customer community. And I said, I even did a survey and I picked five things. I was like, I'm not going to turn on more than five things in the community at once. That's it. Because I can't handle more than that. And so based on that was what I decided, like, okay, well, this is how I'm gonna prioritize. And always start with the customer. And so like, here are some places where I saw a discrepancy. Well, everyone loves ideation. Like, ideation seems so cool. Like, oh yeah, I want to like upvote this feature. It like looks so cool. Like, get direct. And that is like the hardest thing to orchestrate. Like, Jillian's like, yes, I know. It's like freaking terrible when you like promise an entire community, we're like, yeah, we're going to listen to you and we're going to like roll up the features that you plus one to, and ever like you get 200 votes on something and then you don't roll it out. And then they like hate you forever and they don't trust you anymore because of that one experience, because you're not aligned with product. You're not aligned with the community. I mean, it takes a lot of like, especially in the beginning, it's about building trust and getting the heartbeat of the community. So like, become friends with the people, like the folks that I interviewed that were community founders. There's 20 people that helped me shape what the community looked like and actually gave like feedback over the course of several weeks before we did a formal launch. I still keep in touch with them. I'll have at least one or two calls with the community member every single week. I'm like, what's going on? What's working? And then I'll be like, hey, you know, if we decide to do a meetup, like, do you want to run it, Mike? And Mike's like, yeah, of course. And so you're just tapping people. You're like seeding things in the community early on. So you can start doing that. Just make friends. Do what you do best. That's why you're in community. Just like make friends with everyone. Then eventually, like, you'll get buy-in once you're like, look, I already have like 100 customers that are just like, here's 10 emails of customers that are like, we want this community right now. Then you can go to your leadership and be like, well, I have 10 emails and I have all this other quantitative data that shows that they're going to use it. So do you want to buy me something?
Casey, I would. There were so many good points in there, but I think you hit on something that is so common. And I saw nods from Jillian and Laura as well. But when you drop the ball and disintegrate trust within your community, which happens a lot, especially in the unprecedented times that we have been in, does anyone have any tips on how to rebuild trust after something like that happens? Because I am sure that a lot of people have faced that challenge.
I think so much respect to what Anisha's making this sound very simple, right? The steps that she took, people don't do this. People don't do what Anisha did. And there's a part of, you have to get on the phone, or in this case, assume you have to have an actual real conversation. You have to lay that groundwork of just doing a listening tour, exactly like Anisha was saying. And just going back to what Jillian was saying, you start with support and product, and these are your first sort of original fans. Go slow. And I think that's what I always have a hard time with the ROI conversation so early, because the goal at the beginning is to simply nurture and truly just listen and understand and seek to understand, like, why are they there? My first and only question on the interview is, there's two questions. Tell me about your experience with our product. What made you become a customer? That will fill 30 minutes, just those two questions, if you're actually listening and creating space for your customer to understand. And so then if you've actually been able to lay that groundwork and demonstrate appreciation and genuine care, that's hard to fake. You know, it's hard to say, you know, if you haven't actually said thank you for your first discussion post or thank you so much for submitting your idea, when the product doesn't work or you're not responsive and product's not going to add it to the roadmap, when you have those more difficult moments, if you haven't laid that groundwork of genuine trust, genuine kindness, and genuine care, that's what's going to allow you to then grow and just have those more difficult conversations later on because you've actually taken the time for trust. So I think that's really a message for leadership when they expect so many results really quickly. You go slow at the beginning to go fast later on.
That's so true. And that's why I've told my leadership, I'm like, listen, like right now, like the first 6 months, it's all about learning about the community, getting the heartbeat of the community. Who's in the community? How frequently are they posting? What are they asking about? And that way they have trust. Like you have trust with the product team has trust with you. When you say, okay, well, I think it's time to do ideation now. And you can say, well, that's because it looks like we're going into this segment and we are trying to target this persona. And 44% of the people in the community are that persona. And 60% of those are the people that are engaging. So the likelihood of those people actually like helping with this process is really, really high. So you're not getting a whole bunch of people that are like, eh, like, I don't really care what they think. And the wrong persona is upvoting a product feature that isn't where the product and the company wants the roadmap to go. And so that's what it is. It's like, it's trust with your community, but it's also trust with your internal stakeholders. And so for ideation, and I keep bringing up ideation because it's top of mind for me. And so what I've said is, look, we're not going to roll out ideation, but I do think that it's important for our community to know that we care what they think and where they think that our product should go. So I literally just MVP'd it, rolled out a Google form, talked to my product team. And I was like, look, I'm just going to put a Google form in here. And anybody that's in the Gong community that's a customer can request a product feature. And they just take a look at it once a week. And then when we do a release cycle every month, now what we do is we'll actually tag a community member. And by the way, our community is only 2 months old. And we'll tag a community member. And we'll say, like, thank you to Nick Mandelstein, who like was the inspiration for this feature. And with this, we did all this without ideation. So like, then the community is like, oh, they're listening to us. This is really nice. And that's what you want. People just want to be heard. I digress a little bit there, but I did want to
share. No, Nisha, that's so beautiful. That's such a beautiful story. I love that story. And it's so right. I know I work for a company, right? But it's community first, platform second. Start with the simplest, freest tool. Just keep it simple. Just fill out the form, send it to product. The goal is exactly what you've described, which is the responsiveness and the personal touch and that loop back. Because now that community member is going to engage again. It's probably going to blow his or her mind that Gong, and I think of Gong as this huge, right, huge company, they're listening. And that's really the sort of cycle. And start small with that, because then you can always loop back with the platform and have a much more robust system. But you develop those, even that in the internal workflows with product, where you actually have a cadence where you're reviewing them and it's cycling back to you and you have monthly review meetings and just developing those workflows. Even those workflows, I know we've been in this for so long, but those workflows are typically new for product teams too. If you have people on your product team who haven't worked with a community person before. So creating space for those new workflows and those kind of back and forth and the stickiness and the messiness of developing them, that's a really important part of those first 6 months too.
Yes. And I love how we're all aligned without ever like having talked about this in advance about like keeping it simple. And so my dad always used to tell me this, like just growing up about everything. And I think it's like a Navy principle or something, but it's KISS, keep it simple, stupid. You've all probably heard of, you may have heard it like on The Office or something like that. But anytime you're like, what do I do? Just be like, okay, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. So you can look it up if you want more like history on that. But yeah, I think that's the way to go.
Always, always the way to go. I love that. So yeah, any additional tips, top tips for increasing member and community engagement?
Ignoring your members completely. Just letting the community run. Don't greet anybody when they join the community. Ignore them.
And then they will get. Can I say the word? This is the thing that it just drives me crazy. And I know, and I did this, like I made so many, I literally made every single mistake when I lost my first community. But I would post, like, I'm like, I'll post. And like, I'll post again. And then I'll post again. I understand. Like, I understand the impulse behind it because I did it. But that's probably the biggest mistake that I see, especially for groups getting started, where it's staff post, staff post, staff post, staff post, right? They never sort of flipped the switch and said, of course, there should be staff engagement in there. Let's keep it at once a week. And then the meantime, your job is to drive and get other people to post. And I would even do like one-on-one nurturing of collecting questions and saying, can I post on your behalf? hey, I saw you submitted something. Can you go post over here? And just go really, really slow to get other people to post. But resist the urge to have it be just, I see like a wall of stuff sometimes. And I understand because I did it too. But you have to just stop and don't do it and find another way to rebalance. And my rough, actually, I want to run this by you guys. My rough balance is it should be 80% community member posts, 20% staff posts at the most. But I often see early ones be 80% staff posts, 20% user posts, and you just have to get to a much healthier balance. But yeah, I want to drop that with you guys and see what you think about ratios for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts out where it's like, I mean, no one knows what the community is, what to expect. So like in the beginning, it's going to be 80% staff. And then people are like, oh, I think I know what this is. This is the support forum when I can ask questions. And then people will, you know, start engaging. And then, of course, you do want the ratios to flip. But I mean, the Pareto principle works, I think, with everything. Like I think 80-20 is good in the beginning. I mean, you have to have at least, you know, two or three new pieces of content every week. But I mean, it also depends on like what type of community, how many people are in it. Only you can tell if like this is like healthy engagement. And honestly, the best way you can tell is by talking to people. And we just don't do that. And we're like, okay, well, these are the numbers, these are the metrics. And you just like hide. And how many community managers do you know, or even in your past lives, they were like, well, they never actually had conversations. They would just like, just sit in the back and they would map metrics and build programs and just do all of it like as far away from the customer, the community member as possible. I feel like Jillian has something to say. I'm like looking in your eyes and I'm like, Jillian.
So the interesting thing, so this is kind of where once your community is built, it's up, it's running, it has engagement and it's good. And now you're looking at it and someone's saying, well, how do you get more members? How do you get more engagement? The irony is that there are certain situations in which that's actually not the most important metric anymore. And it's really funny because like I always have to tell people this. Like I see a lot of communities, they get to about between like, you know, 2 and 5 years old. They're having in place. Engagement happens when it should happen. And now they're going, well, I want more members. Our members are not going fast enough. If you are a support community, you actually don't want to focus anymore on membership and engagement, which is completely weird if you think about it. But if you're a support community, you actually want to start looking now on the consumption of existing content, the utilization of existing content. That's actually the most important thing you can do for your company from like a revenue, a cost perspective, everything like that is actually now swapping your perspective from membership and engagement and now to utilization and consumption. So that's kind of like it's weird. And so the reason I mentioned that is like, that's very front of mind for me right now. So the community I'm in, Zapier community, you know, we get a lot of great questions every single week. We actually don't pay attention to membership anymore. Like the other day, we just happened to accidentally like hit a pretty good milestone number. None of us noticed it for a week because we're not paying attention to that anymore. But the fact that we'd had some massive amount of new user sessions that week, that we noticed, that was definitely something worth being like, hey, everyone, we had a record number of searches and user sessions. And this indicates higher consumption, those metrics that we're really looking for. So something to keep in mind. If you're someone on this call that your community is a little bit more mature, your metric focus actually starts to shift.
Yeah, working with more mature communities, there is this idea, too, kind of going back to the executive reporting and the sharing out again, there is this idea of more. We want more. We reporting to groups and, you know, there's a really nice graph. And I say, this is really healthy. But they went, no, we want more engagement, more. You're like, well, no, but, you know, we're in a really good place. So I think that's a really good point to not be defensive and let's take a really big step back to the business goals. It's always good to revisit those every 6 months anyways. What are we trying to do? Are we trying to move the needle on success? Are we having issues with retention? What's the business goal that we're trying to achieve? Are we trying to generate more leads and support sales now? Are we trying to generate more product ideas and just taking a moment to reset? Because if you're getting that feedback from your executives, that's tricky. That's a tricky situation to be in. If it's just simply a blind more, it has to be. I've had groups not be satisfied until 100% of people in their database have logged in and are posting on every day, right? Like, so you have to kind of take a moment and just reset on those expectations, but going back to the business goals can help you adopt not as a defensive of a posture when you know that's not realistic and that's not appropriate. It's not going to happen.
That's also how burnout happens, right? And community managers burn out really quickly because they're like more and more and more. And I think when people ask you to work harder, then work smarter. When people ask you to work smart, then work different and think, okay, well, how can I be different? How can I roll something out differently that will still conserve my energy, but will still get some results? Like people don't, they don't care that you have 15. Well, we have 15 posts this week and yesterday, you know, or last week we had 8 posts and like we doubled our posts and people like don't really care. But if you're like, hey, well, we decided to do like, you know, a really cool, I don't know, like a poll and a live video in chat, something. We did some cool embed widget and I rolled this cool thing out with product. Like it's a little bit more collaborative and like a little bit more masterful. But I think that there are ways that you can show that like community is still making impact without just like doing a, like just a ton more stuff in the community. Like how do you build around the community to make the community more successful? Like I have another topic around growth, but I won't go there yet. And I think we have more questions to go through.
Are you sure?
Well, maybe this is something that I'd love to get your feedback, the three of you, is I've been seeing more like growth, like community growth positions pop up. And I've seen this in actually pretty much like every sector of the business is like, oh, like, you know, especially in marketing, like, oh, like we've got like a person that's responsible for growth, like a product person, they're responsible for growth. And it's like, what does that even mean? Like, I believe for community, like we are all responsible for growth. Like if you do a great job with like content and programming and like listening to, you know, your community members and figuring out what they want and then helping initiate that, I feel like growth naturally happens. So I really think it's unfair. I've seen so many of my friends and colleagues in the past who are in these like growth roles that just kind of like get stuck with the bill when they're not getting more. It's like, well, it's that person's fault. They're responsible for growth. And it's like, dude, no, gender neutral, dude. No, we're literally all responsible for growth. Like it's just really unfair. So anyway, when I was devising headcount for next year, I was like, we will not hire someone for growth because we are all responsible for growth, just as an FYI. And people were like, well, we didn't know that you like, well, thanks for that, like sharing this information. But anyway, I was just curious other people's thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to say, so I'll step back. So when I was a community manager, I would get shuffled between departments depending on the focus area for community. So sometimes I was on customer success, which I do believe should really be the home for community. I feel very strongly about that. Sometimes I was on marketing, but when I was in marketing, of course, marketing just wants me to essentially just farm the community for stories. And they're like, go get referrals from your community members. And so that doesn't work. It doesn't work to house community under marketing because it really, really needs to be about the experience. Because if we're delivering an experience, we all know that whatever percentages of business that come from referral, that's where it's going to come. So the core need, and I know Nisha, we always talked about this, but the core need, it has to be about delivering that superior customer experience because you're going to get the growth that you want to see too. You can work in partnership with marketing. I think there's an interesting structure now in community teams. If you have a director of community, you could have a community manager who's in charge of nurturing the community on a day-to-day basis, doing moderation, just kind of doing that day-to-day work. I think there could be another role under the director of community there that does focus much more, maybe just a really heavy content person who's interested in collecting those stories, telling those stories, maybe the nurturing, doing the one-on-one conversations, maybe more of a relationships person. I think as you're building out a more robust community team, there could be a role for that, but it has to still come always back to the customer experience component of this. And then it's a secondary part of it to serve marketing too. But yeah, I don't want that job. That makes me nervous to just be the community growth person if you don't have the experience in place too.
That definitely makes sense. And I think it makes sense what you're saying about having a community live under customer success, because one of the themes that I've heard from you all so much is just listen, right? And I think there isn't a better way that I've seen to really stay close to the heart of the feedback that's coming into the community than, I mean, obviously, you know, being in the community itself. But so often, customer success hears the problems first, right? So it's nice to be plugged in there for sure. Let's move to the next one. Thoughts on exclusivity and community building and community management. And I think we all understand, you know, there are communities that rely heavily on exclusivity as part of the appeal. Is that a component in yours? How do you think about exclusivity in your communities?
I was excited about this one, actually. This is fun. This question actually doesn't get asked that much. So when I think about exclusivity for especially the life cycle of it, I think there's a huge advantage to designing an exclusive community or a sense of FOMO invitation only at the early days. So I think, but back to what Nisha was saying about those sort of first 20 gongsters and getting them in and they're special and they're there and they were invited, or even something that I did when I was running Osmosis's group is I would only invite people who would get on the phone with me for that conversation, because that told me that we were able to build a connection. We built a relationship. I could trust them. They're early adopters. If you care enough to get on the phone with me, just as I care enough to get on the phone with you, you're probably at a higher level of engagement. So for me, that was the filter, is someone's willingness to even just get on a quick phone interview with me. That was enough. And I didn't have necessarily like an application form and other filters. Just that layer of someone taking the time and the investment to share their feedback with me and share their experience told me that they were going to be a really great sort of first stage early community member. So for me, that was how I was defining exclusivity in the early days. And that worked really well, because then we had this really great cohort of people who all really wanted to be there and had passed a bar in a way, but the bar was just their investment and their willingness to be open and share. So for me, that was the best way to structure it, that I would still recommend that to anyone in the early days.
That's a great reframe of exclusivity in terms of just the bar being your passion and interest to be a part of the community. That's great.
And just get on a call. Like, you just have to get on a call.
Totally.
Just get on a call. That's hard to scale, though. That's hard to scale.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely kind of struggled with, like, I know there are communities out there that are very exclusive. And I see reasons for some of them. I think it really depends on what type of community you're working with. Like, if it's a community of passion or interest, there's definitely an opportunity to maybe make it something that's like, it's cool. It's a club. It's almost kind of like back when you were in high school. And I'll admit, I was on the robotics club. It was a very exclusive thing to be like part of the robotics club. I told you I'm a nerd. I warned all of you. Anyway,
don't be too cool, Jillian. Don't be too cool, Jillian. Whatever.
I mean, I was bad. I was the captain of the robotics club. Like, I was that cool.
There you go.
Anyways. Anyways. So, like, there are definitely times where, like, it can be cool to be part of a club. But if you're doing something that's a community of knowledge or innovation or support, I would not be exclusive. Be as open as you possibly can. There's obviously opportunities to have exclusivity in those open communities, though. So, for instance, maybe a group for your super users. Maybe you have different special groups for verticals. There could be opportunities for clubs. But if I was in any other situation, I would stay away from being exclusive. That is a big thing for me. It's like, I really think communities work because they're all about being open. I mean, if you move into your new neighborhood next week, you're not going to want, you know, your new neighbors to come out and be like, you're not part of this club. Like, you're not going to want that. You want to be an open community where it's easy for you to get involved, to be part of it. And so I think our digital communities, our digital neighborhoods need to be the same way too.
Yeah. And I think for me, when I first heard this question, I was like, how do I answer this question? And I don't really think it's about exclusivity so much as it's making people feel special in the way they want to feel special. Kind of like, okay, well, a lot of times this isn't unscalable, especially like in the beginning of a community, which is like where I'm at. But I think it's really just understanding, and I don't know why the book, The Five Love Languages, comes to mind, but it's really just like showing your community members why they're special and they're important to you and making them feel special. And so, you know, greeting every single person that will come to the community with a personal note. I mean, I think that is a way to foster that sense of like feeling special and the exclusivity, or telling someone like, hey, like you're one of like the first 100 people to join the community. You're so cool. Thank you so much. And so it's not necessarily like you don't have to build a program around exclusivity. I think you just have to make people feel special for wherever they are in their journey. Exactly tactically what that looks like, I mean, I really think it's up to you, like in your community and what you want to do on the fly. Like, we just surpassed our 1,000th community member on Gong, and I'm going to send them a note and then send them a gift. And like, hey, like, you happen to be number 1,000. Like, remember when, like, in grocery stores, if you were like, I don't know, you got as close to $1,000 as possible, or I don't know, whatever, like, they would have like confetti and stuff. Like, I don't know, just making people feel like it's exclusive. Everyone wants to feel that way.
Well, I think what you hit on that resonated with me a lot is that it's really about making people feel special, and that exclusivity is one way that people can feel special, like being a part of something that other people can't be a part of. But there are so many other ways to make people feel special that can be really inclusive, or like Nisha, your real example, really random, right? Or Laura, based on their, again, willingness to participate and less about, you know, any type of qualifications on their end. So I think you all hit really wonderful points there. I want to be respectful of time as we are getting to the end, but if we can go to the next question, if we can rapid fire, is there one piece of technology that you just couldn't imagine managing your community without? I know that we talked about it being way beyond the technology, but for those who are trying to be more like you and manage their communities better, what are the pieces of technology that you rely on daily?
I would just say Meetsy. Laura called it out in the beginning. Love that.
As a community manager, I'm going to have to say too, we're a Monday house here in Highlight. So Monday.com is just absolutely incredible for organizing lists and project management, content calendars. So we're a Monday family here. And then I also Calendly. I mean, there's no other way to be able to do this work at scale and do the scheduling and the outreach and do those personal touches and have different like 10-minute calendar or 30-minute, whatever you want to do. So those are my two. So Monday and Calendly are just absolutely just great. Everyone loves them.
First off, there's no good name for it, but basically really, really good moderation tools. So when I look at a platform, moderation is key. I could not manage a community of the sizes that I do without the type of moderation tools that I rely on. So that's huge. And then the other one I'd also say is actually Slack. I have a really big community team. Actually, I have a really big team in general. And so for me, it's really important as a 100% remote team. We really need to be able to connect with each other outside of our community at a very personal level every single day, all day long. Lots of memes and emojis and random things about cookies and mood rings. Don't ask. I don't know why. That's really important to us. So yeah.
Amazing. Thank you all for giving different answers for that too. I feel like that's really helpful for everybody who's listening. And we are going to be able to host another community-focused event in 2 weeks to hopefully get to a few more of the questions that we didn't get to today and to learn even more. So I hope that everyone will be able to attend that as well. Thank you so much for being here and taking the time to share your wisdom with us. I so appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com for more ways to connect. And remember, new episodes come out on Tuesday.